So this morning we're going to do an overview of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. That's quite a daunting task, as this is, as you can see, Srila Prabhupada's translation is a very thick book. Must be at least 1,000 pages, 1,200 pages, and we have about 45 minutes. So let's see what we can do in 45 minutes. I'd like to start by telling you a couple of stories. What we're going to do is we'll go through several verses, and I'll just find them in my book here and read them to you as we get there. But let's start with a couple of stories. Srila Prabhupada tells a story that there was once a man, evidently quite a foolish man. He was sitting in a tree. One of these, you can imagine one of these big trees out here with big branches. He was sitting in a tree on a big branch, and he had a saw, and he was sawing off the branch. The problem was is that he was on the outside of the branch, and he was sawing on the inside of the branch. And so another fellow walked by and said, "Well, you know, my dear sir, if you keep doing that, you know, the branch is going to break and you're going to fall out of the tree." And the guy said to him, "Don't bother me. You know, mind your own business. Why are you, you know, trying to disturb me?" So sure enough, he kept on sawing, and the branch cracked and he fell down. And when that happened, he ran after the man who was talking to him and said, "Oh, dear sir, you're such a realized soul. Please, you know, instruct me about life." And the man was foolish because in two ways. Not only was he sawing the branch in the wrong place that he was going to fall, but he also was accepting someone who had ordinary knowledge or realization as a realized soul. And now, indeed, the man that told him he was going to fall was kind of a realized soul. He knew what was going to happen. He was basically experienced in life. He could understand that, well, you saw like that, the branch is going to fall. So this is a kind of realization, a realized state, but obviously it's far short of the type of self-realization that's taught in Srimad Bhagavatam. But it gives you some idea of where the average conditioned soul begins his journey in trying to understand spiritual life. We're just like that foolish person sitting on the branch, sawing it, not knowing what the actual circumstances are. So Srimad Bhagavatam is a literature. It's a realized scripture. And so it doesn't. It begins with in the first canto and throughout all 12 cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam, begins with a fully realized understanding of the purpose of life. And who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? It's called the mature fruit of the Vedic wisdom. Not only is it the mature fruit of the Vedic wisdom, but it's also compiled by Srila Vyasadeva in his maturity. So if we turn to the, and I'll just turn to it as you don't have the book, but if we turn to the second verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, first chapter, second verse. It says, "This beautiful Bhagavatam, compiled by the great sage Vyasa," and then it has in parentheses, "in his maturity, is sufficient in itself for God realization." So, realization is the subject matter, God realization specifically. And here, Vyasadeva is described in his maturity. Does anybody have any idea what that means, in his maturity? What would that mean? Follow the same rule? Complete understanding, advanced understanding of the absolute truth, yes. Any other definitions anyone has? Any other thoughts on that? Yes, Prabhu. What's your name, Prabhu? Prajavasi, Prabhu. Okay, compiled after compiling all the Vedas and then specifically focused on Krishna, yes. Yeah, this is what it means in his maturity. He understood what he understood that the purpose of life is to understand God and to love Him. Those two things: to understand God and to love Him. And Srimad Bhagavatam was compiled specifically for those purposes. Now there are a lot of purposes in the scriptures. Especially the Vedic literatures, they're so vast, you can find anything and everything that you want in there. It's like a desire tree. Anything you want, you go to the Vedic literatures to find. Even things which are very materially motivated, you find in the Vedic scriptures. But those things aren't the mature fruit of the Vedic literatures. So therefore, it's advised that we not get lost in the flowery words of the Vedas, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Don't get distracted by the flowery words of the Vedas. It means that you can go to the Vedas for wealth, for good health, for a beautiful wife or husband. Anything you want, you can go to the Vedas for, but you shouldn't get distracted by those things. But you should keep the focus on the mature purpose. And that mature purpose is? Anyone? To understand God and to love Him. So that's what it means when it says that Srila Vyasadeva compiled this in his maturity. And he specifically focused on that and that alone. Being the compiler of all the Vedas, as Brajavasi said, being the compiler of all the Vedas, he understood that the Vedas, and specifically even the Vedanta Sutra, could be misused. It could be misused by people that are materially motivated. And so therefore, specifically in the second verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, this description of the maturity is further elaborated by saying, completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated, this Bhagavat Purana propounds the highest truth, which is understandable by those devotees who are fully pure in heart. So fully pure in heart means you're only interested in two things, as Chaitanya told us. Understanding God and loving Him. That's what purity in heart means. And so that the Bhagavatam is meant for that purpose. And so therefore I say it's a realized Shastra, realized scripture. And this theme of realization is throughout the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Of course, there are many things you could cover in an overview of such a vast literature, but I want to focus on this idea of realization. Understanding something more than just what meets the eye or what bounces off the eardrums or what crosses the tongue. We want some realization about it. I mean, you should be having realization more than the students you're serving in Krishna lunch when you take prasadam. Because you are students of this process, you should have more realization than someone that's just taking it as ordinary food. Although they get a benefit, you get more benefit because of your realization. You're in expanded consciousness. And so that type of realization and how it's manifest in the teachings throughout the Bhagavatam is what we'll focus on today. Now, as you may know, Srimad Bhagavatam, in the first canto, there's a very, very important description of Srila Vyasadeva's realization, which led him to compile Srimad Bhagavatam. And that's found in the 7th chapter of this first canto, described starting in text number 6. So I just want to go over that with you. Srila Vyasadeva, after having compiled all the Vedic literatures, was a little despondent. Even after doing such great service, he wasn't feeling completely satisfied. And his spiritual master, Narada Muni, came to him, and they had some discussion about these things that we were already introduced, understanding God and loving Him. Narada Muni explained to him that the way that one can really feel satisfied in life or realized in life is by focusing on those two things. And so Srila Vyasadeva sat in meditation at the instructions of his spiritual master, and then this famous verse appears in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.7.6. Anarto pasamam sakshad bhakti yogam adhokshade Lokasya janato vidvams chakre satvata samhitam. The material miseries of the living entities, which are superfluous to him, can be directly mitigated by the linking process of devotional service. But the mass of people do not know this, and therefore the learned Vyasadeva compiled this Vedic literature, which is in relation to the Supreme Truth. So Srila Vyasadeva had a realization. And his realization is summarized by Mother Naraini in this book, Srimad Bhagavatam at a Glance, first canto. So I'll read to you her description of his realization. Srila Vyasadeva, in his trance of meditation, saw the Supreme Lord Krishna, along with his material energy, who was under full control. He saw the living entities of this world needlessly suffering due to misidentification with their material bodies, and he understood the remedy for this situation, pure devotional service to Lord Krishna. Thus he wrote this Srimad Bhagavatam, which could free everyone from lamentation, illusion, and fear. So this is a nice description of what it means to have a realization. In one vision, he saw all of these things. He saw the Supreme Lord. He saw the material energy, and he understood. Again, not just that these things bounced off his retina and registered in his mind, but rather he understood. He could understand that this is the Supreme Lord, Krishna, and that he's the master of the material energy. And that material energy is fully under his control. He also saw that all living entities, they're suffering due to misidentification of the body with the body, and that the remedy for this is for them to hear about the Supreme Personality of God in his pastimes. He saw all of this at once. It was a complete experience, let's say. Not that he had to learn it in a class, and he learned about the material energy and how Krishna controls, and then that the living entity is suffering. No, all at once, this just became this impression came upon him. His realization was full in that regard, and I think we've all kind of had an experience. You think back in a story I was telling, the man that was walking by, seeing the guy sawing the tree, he could understand what was going to happen in the future. he can understand that this person was acting in a foolish way. They're going to fall. They could get hurt. They might get killed. He could understand it just by observing the situation. And so, similarly, Srila Vyasadeva, in a much deeper way, he could understand through this vision that he had what was the problem with this material world and what was the solution. All at once, he grasped all of this in his realization. In other words, realization transcends time, space, individual circumstances. It gives us a sort of a 360-degree view of a situation. And so in that state, from that state of consciousness, this Srimad Bhagavatam was written. Not from a limited state or in an interested state. All the Vedic literatures, as presented by the Acharyas, have this characteristic that there's no desire for exploitation of the people through the literature, through the teachings. Simply the benefit of all living beings is the goal. And so we can take comfort in that as we approach the Bhagavatam, that it's meant simply for our well-being, for our benefit. There's no self-interest on the part of anyone presenting it. Indeed, in the second chapter of this first canto, there's another verse which very nicely describes how a realized person, what a realized person is in terms of presenting the Srimad Bhagavatam. And that's in the first canto, second chapter, text number 19. There it says, is it 19? No, number 9. Not 19, number 9. Dharmasya hi apavargasya narto ratayo patkalpate nartasya dharmakantasya kamo labhaya hi smitaha. All occupational engagements are certainly meant for ultimate liberation. They should never be performed for material gain. Furthermore, according to the sages, one who is engaged in the ultimate occupational service should never use material gain to cultivate sense gratification. So this is a qualification of one who has realized that they're engaged in devotional service simply for knowing and loving the Supreme Lord and for no other purpose. And if they get material gain, they never use it for cultivation of sense gratification. So we can be confident that as we hear from the Acharyas, the Bhagavatam, that there's no motive for exploitation, only for the good or benefit, as described in Srila Vyasadeva's trance of self-realization. Does anyone have any questions on that? Yes, Kalakanti Prabhu. Oh, okay. Thomas Hopkins. Prabhupada specifically asked Thomas Hopkins, a scholar, what was the most important verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, and he pointed to this verse. Oh, Hopkins asked Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said this. Okay. 129. Why, Kalakanta, maybe you can, I'll give you the mic here. Why do you think Prabhupada said it like that?
I believe because
that you're not simply self-interested. Maturity has this connotation of not caring about things more than just for your individual self. And so cultivating sense gratification in the name of religion certainly is a selfishness to a certain degree, maybe not as much as a gross materialist. But that's the qualification for having the type of realization that Srila Vyasadeva had in his trance. How to work for the benefit of all beings. And that well-being is achieved simply by giving oral reception to the messages of Srimad Bhagavatam. So in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, this whole foundation is being laid for understanding all the pastimes of the Lord's incarnations and ultimately the pastimes of the Lord himself in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Why we're hearing all these things? Why are we hearing all these things? To purify our heart, to come to the level of trying to know and love God with our every action. Now, there are a couple of other instances that take place throughout the first canto in which other realizations are taking place. So let's turn to first canto, 17th chapter, text number 18. And this is a very interesting discussion between Maharaj Parikshit, to whom the Bhagavatam was being recited, and Dharma personified in the form of a bull. As you may know, there's a description of Kali Yuga in this first canto, where all of the ill effects of Kali Yuga are being described, and particularly Dharma or religiosity is being attacked, and so the personified personality of religion in the form of a bull was obviously had been attacked and was suffering, and so Maharaj Parikshit was asking, what happened to you? Who's to blame for your condition? And so Dharma the bull replies, O greatest, this is text number 18, let's read 17. The personality of religion said, these words just spoken by you befit a person of the Pandava dynasty. Captivated by the devotional qualities of the Pandavas, even Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead, performed duties as a messenger. O greatest among human beings, it is very difficult to ascertain the particular miscreant who has caused our suffering because we are bewildered by all the different opinions of theoretical philosophers. Some of the philosophers who deny any sort of duality declare that one's own self is responsible for his personal happiness and distress. Others say that superhuman powers are responsible, while yet others say that activity is responsible, and the gross materialists maintain that nature is the ultimate cause. There are also some thinkers who believe that no one can ascertain the cause of distress by argumentation, nor know it by imagination, nor express it by words. O sage among the kings, judge for yourself by thinking over all this with your own intelligence. This is actually a very deep realization that's being spoken by Dharma, because all of us face some situation in this material world where we suffer in a particular way or enjoy in a particular way, and we take certain persons, certain circumstances to be the cause of these things. But here, the words of a realized person are explaining that we shouldn't take the immediate cause or what we can perceive directly with our senses as being the only cause of the sufferings or enjoyment we may be having in this world. There are actually so many reasons why we're in any particular situation, any particular time in our life. And a realized person will know this, and it will, if you know that, how does it affect your behavior? Ms. Chaitanya? Yeah, that's very good. Thank you. We take responsibility ourselves, and we don't blame others or become angry with others. Yes. Okay. Yeah, we think it's good for us, and that it's help us, not meaningless suffering or something like that. How many people in life go through difficulties thinking that the sufferings I'm going through are meaningless? But that we have that realization. Yes. Anything else anyone wants to add? Yes. So you have an expectation of you have a natural expectation of other people involved in a certain service. Yeah, that's very good. Very good. Anything else anyone wants to add here about the realization? Yeah, it certainly changes our life and our view of any kind of circumstance we're in. It can make an intolerable situation tolerable. It can actually give us some real solace because, as I said, so many people go through life thinking that life has no meaning and that they're suffering for no cause. Indeed, there's a whole genre of writers, mainly French, Camus, others, who existentialists who just feel that life is just meaningless suffering. And that's their conclusion. Obviously, they're godless in their thinking, and this verse, this circumstance may help them. But again, this is a realized view of life, and we should try to live our life like that, not just caught up in the immediate circumstances of things, but carrying with us a broader consciousness. You can always sort of picture yourself of having like consciousness, as I said, 360 around your head and your being, that you're more aware than other persons, and you'll be ultimately more happy than other persons as well. Okay. In this regard, there's another example in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. I don't have this one marked, but it's Queen Kunti's example. Queen Kunti was the aunt of Krishna, the mother of the Pandavas, and Lord Krishna was living with them at Hastinapur after the Battle of Kurukshetra. But then Krishna decided to leave. And when he decided to leave, Mother Kunti offered a prayer. Can anybody say what Mother Kunti's prayer was? Chaitanya, you're answering everything. Maybe, okay. Maybe you're the only one. Okay. Well, we'll give you the mic then.
I just have been inspired by Queen Kunti because she's saying that she would like that her to be in this continuous anxiety, because then she could always remember Krishna. Because she was saying that in the good times she would forget Krishna. So in these anxiety times, Krishna was always right there in her consciousness and giving her solace. So she's very inspiring for us in the Kali Yuga, who's always suffering, it seems like.
It's quite amazing, isn't it, that she is, people pray to God for relief of miseries. But she's praying to God to continue to have miseries. What's the difference in her consciousness, or those two consciousnesses, Gopal?
Well, she says that because by seeing you, because by these calamities we see you, and by seeing you we will no longer see repeated birth and death. So that's her mentality.
So repeated birth and death entail suffering, and seeing Krishna entails liberation from that suffering. But what actually goes on seems to be something else. I mean, the Pandavas, for instance, their life was full of suffering. Their wife was insulted. They had to live in the forest for 12 years. So many calamities happened there. But the devotee prays for those things. Because, why? Why does the devotee pray for those things, yes?
So that Krishna remains always close to them, because during the calamities time, Krishna is always close to the Pandavas. And he's always guiding the Pandavas to this, to that.
When you're suffering, you feel helpless, so you can more easily call out to Krishna.
Ultimately, we're not this body, are we? And so, anarto pasamam shakshad bhakti yoga ahokshaje. What was Vyasadeva's realization? That the material miseries that are being suffered by the living entities are superfluous to them. In other words, they're not really the miseries of a living entity. And so a realized soul like Kunti Devi, not that she was sort of a masochist or something and just wanted to suffer, but she realized her identity as spirit soul, and in that identity, the sufferings that happened to her material body weren't even perceived by her as real miseries. They weren't perceived by miseries, but they were perceived as causes for bringing Krishna closer and staying there with her. And so therefore, she wanted those things in her mature realization of her position as a spirit soul. And we experience that to a certain degree also. Again, we have some amount of realization. We experience that in circumstances where, say like in a kirtan or something like that. If we're in a kirtan and it's going on for a long time and it's getting more and more and more ecstatic and we're dancing and chanting at the top of our lungs, in a sense, our body is becoming stressed, isn't it? At least my body becomes stressed. So it's becoming stressed, but and those are miseries. Who wants to suffer that kind of misery? But do you mind that at all? All you see is a big smile on the face of all the devotees in the kirtan, and they love it, even though the body is in some kind of a distressed kind of situation. So we go beyond that in terms of the spiritual enjoyment. And that enjoyment, we should understand, is not the enjoyment of the body. It's the enjoyment of the spirit soul. So Queen Kunti's example is there of her realization in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, finally, there is the realization of Parikshit Maharaj himself. Right at the end of the first canto, the final chapter, before we go on to the second canto, where Sukadeva Goswami, the speaker of Bhagavatam, actually begins speaking, we get the situation of Parikshit Maharaj. He was emperor of the world, coming in a very great family of devotees. Yet when he went to the forest for hunting, he became overcome by thirst, fatigue, and then he did something completely uncharacteristic of himself and his family. Does anybody know what it was? Can say? Yes? Okay, yeah. He disrespected the saintly order. He disrespected the saintly order. Can you imagine what his forefathers must have thought, you know, of him doing something like that? He put the snake around the neck of the meditating sage. The sage's son, small boy, inexperienced Brahmin, cursed him to die in 7 days, bitten by a snake bird. So, there's a lot of different ways to react to a situation like this. How might you have reacted? Anybody want to volunteer? How? Well, if you were in the position of Maharaj Pariksit and someone cursed you to die, how would you have reacted? Huh? So, go to Vrindavan with your whole family, yes? You want to say something? Go ahead. Right. Anger, lamentation, resentment, because you had so much to lose by that. Yeah, that's very good, yes. We see that a lot in the stories in Bhagavatam, don't they? When someone's cursed, they come to some realization. But only realization only comes after they've been cursed or something like that. Then they go and beg, you know, please, you know, reduce it. But that's not always possible. So, yeah, that's another reaction. Yes, Chaitanya?
Wasn't it true also that he actually had the power to curse the curse?
Okay. Great king, devotee, he could have reversed the curse, yes. But he didn't do that. Anything. Try to defend yourself. These are all natural reactions. But they're reactions, some of what you said, not all of what you said, but I think you can imagine that there are reactions which could be unrealized, so to speak. You know, the resentment, the anger that immediately swells up in one, the revenge, these kind of things are sort of natural conditioned responses to your whole being being threatened. But Maharaj Pariksit was a realized soul, and so he didn't react like that. He decided to fast until death and execute the real purpose of life. Yes. Well, I think that one way to relate being tired and thirsty, we understand that if we step back with a realized look at the whole situation, we understand that, as we read earlier, the material energy is completely under the control of Krishna. And so that energy can be influenced to have us act in any way according to his plan. So he was hungry and thirsty. These are material influences that are superfluous to the pure spirit soul. But to achieve the purpose of the Lord can have those manifest and cover us over and act in certain ways to elicit a certain response. And so in that way we can understand, you can call it Leela, but I don't think it's Lord's plan, let's say, for glorifying his devotee, for having Srimad Bhagavatam be spoken. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Okay. That the arrangement of the Lord. Not using his power to counteract is also showing the glory of a devotee, that they're, again, acting in a realized way, not seeing this person as the cause of my suffering, but that there's a greater plan at hand. You wanted to add to that?
Here, for example, you have a great person, you know, a powerful person, let's say the president of America, and he may have a lot of power. At the same time, that doesn't mean that he may not be affected by bodily discomfort and react to something like that. But he may have the power to, or you know, override something or whatever. So I don't necessarily think that it just has to be, you know, yes, we understand it's Leela, but I think we can relate to it. I guess that's one of my point, is that we can relate to it, that somebody being, overcome by such thing and react in such a way. At the same time, they're very powerful people and they can override different things.
It's also a type of self-control. If one is powerful, one can exercise control over his senses. He's more powerful. Who was more powerful, Prahlad Maharaj or his father, Hiranyakasipu? Obviously, his father had more bodily strength and everything, but because he couldn't control his senses, actually, Prahlad Maharaj, his son, a small boy, was more powerful than him, and he couldn't destroy him. By all the bodily strength he had. So restraint is a part of realization, and that's what we're focusing on here in class today.
I didn't mean to like make this a problem. I was just
Okay, so for the other students here in the class today, then, based on what we've discussed so far, what would be your response to her situation that she should do in this circumstance where she's been overcome by the material energy and felt tired and thirsty and acted in ways which... What would you advise her to do at this stage? And
pray for help.
Pray for help from Srila Prabhupada. Yes? Go to the person. Okay, anything else? All right. Yes. He's qualified now. He's graduated from nursing school. he knows how to... He knows how to take care of his patients. Yes, actually, that's the response. Actually, that's what Pariksit Maharaj did, right? That's the point we're getting to. What was his realized response to that situation? He decided that let whatever reaction comes to what I've done come, but I'm going to sit down and hear the pastimes of the Lord. Because, again, that was Srila Vyasadeva's realization, wasn't it?
question actually. In these lines.
That was Srila Vyasadeva's realization, that these material miseries are actually superfluous to the spirit soul. But right now we're very identifying with them, and the solution to the suffering is to hear the glories of the Supreme Lord. Therefore he compiled Srimad Bhagavatam. And so it is very relevant to your life. We all have the experiences like you have. We go through that and the situations in the material world, and the solution for all of us is to hear Srimad Bhagavatam.
So also in our spiritual life, if we make some mistakes, like sometimes Maya is very strong and we make mistakes, so should we think, well, maybe Krishna arranged it, or should we... So what should be our response? Like Parikshit Maharaj, he was in this situation, and as you mentioned, he said, okay, let me get the reaction. And but then also, like with us, like what should be our mood, what should be our reaction to such things?
I think you're helping also, because it's not just Leela. In other words, I take his question as being saying, well, we can just take it, oh, it's Leela, it doesn't matter and everything. No, I mean, it does matter. So we should take it seriously. So what should be our response? Is it simply a matter of just going to the bank of the river and fasting? Or what other things should we do?
I can share my understanding, which is Krishna will never give you anything that you can't handle. He may take you up to the brim, but it won't cross it. You won't be overwhelmed. So that's my experience. So maybe Maharaj Parikshit was qualified enough to handle that situation.
Okay. So I understand what you're saying. Is it take faith in Krishna first? First of all, how we face this situation, we maintain our faith in Krishna, that Krishna is with me and he's helping me. But I think we got some other help. Gopal, you said before, go to the person and apologize. Yes, I think that's what a Vaishnava will do also. What else will a Vaishnava do in a circumstance like this? Yes? Okay. Yeah, praise the Vaishnavas as opposed to just vilifying them or trying to get back at them. Any other advice? Yes. Okay, yeah. Forgive yourself. Forgiveness of yourself, I think, is based in understanding that the material miseries of the living entity are superfluous to him. But we falsely identify. And so if we know that we falsely identified and that we're overcome by material energy, then we can understand what actually happened. Not blame ourselves, go around feeling guilty, but move forward and do something positive. Approach the person, ask forgiveness, worship Krishna, have faith in Krishna. These things are there. Yes. Chant Hare Krishna, yes. Yes, that's hearing the glories of the Lord, definitely. So we should do that. Okay, yes, any other questions? Yeah, the boy cursed him that he would, the boy's name was Sringi, and he cursed him that he'll die by the bite of a snake bird in 7 days. And so there's this creature that, what is it? Daksha, that flies. It's a bird, a snake, and it was going to bite him, and he was going to die. There's snake birds in Florida? Well, they're different species of life. I don't know about all these things. All I know is I don't want to see one. So his response was, Pariksit Maharaj's response was completely to depend upon the Lord and hear the glories of the Lord, because what is the ultimate purpose of life?